Welcome to the Trauma Survivorhood Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Miley, an IFS-informed certified trauma recovery coach. This show features interviews from survivors all over the world as they share their impactful story of thriving in their post-traumatic growth. We explore resources, tools, and coping skills to support the trauma survivor community. Enjoy. Welcome back to the Trauma Survivorhood Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Miley. I'm an IFS-informed trauma recovery coach, and I have with us today Dr. Maisha Claiborne. Dr. Maisha is an integrative family physician. She is a master practitioner of NLP and hypnosis, and she is the founder of Mind Remapping Academy, which is a school of NLP, hypnosis, and timeline therapy. A healer at heart with over 20 years experience, she is passionate about transforming the lives of the people that she coaches by teaching them how to communicate more effectively and how to eliminate the fear, self-doubt, negative thoughts, and feelings that get in the way of their clarity, focus, and productivity. As a speaker, trainer, and coach, Dr. Maisha loves empowering her students and clients in business, entrepreneurship, and in the power of the unconscious mind. Her own struggle with burnout has originally inspired her to step outside of this box, and now her framework and programs now help doctors and medical professionals around the world reclaim their time, their freedom, and their peace of mind. Dr. Maisha, thank you so much for being here today. We're so glad to have you. Let's dive in. Tell us more about your story, going from burnout to where you are now, helping people to not burn out, which is great.
Yes, I appreciate. First of all, thank you for having me on the show. I am very excited for this conversation. Mm-hmm. So I think the question you asked was ask the question again. I'm sorry. My brain went somewhere.
Yeah. Tell us more about your journey, your story. How did you get here? How did you land in this space now, coaching and training?
Well, so I'm going to start a little bit back. I think that how I, you know, just historically how I got here is from my personal experience. And so what I'll share is that I am a child witness, or was a child witness of domestic abuse. So that is what I grew up with. And I think that I'm going to sort of jump a little back and forth. I think that ultimately where I've landed is sort of full circle moment. So I'm a physician trained, but I have always been fascinated with the mind and how the mind works, human behavior. And I think it comes from how I grew up. I think the questions that I had around seeing why my stepfather acted the way he acted, and then why my mother subsequently acted the way she acted after she left, understanding why does this stuff happen and why did it happen to me? And then getting into college and finding psychology, when I knew that psychology was for me as a major is when I took abnormal psych. And then when I took behavioral after that, I said, oh, this is where I'm supposed to be. This is fulfilling a need. Yeah. And then I almost went that route, completely, you know, ditched my promise to go to medical school. Mm-hmm. But I had this fascination with the body as well. Yeah. And so where it's taken me is into integrative medicine, which is the marriage of the holistic modalities and what people would call Western or traditional practices of medicine today. And always I have been in this space of what is the root of a belief that would have you not be empowered around your health, or that would have you not taken action around your health. Mm-hmm. And over time, as I left clinical medicine to empower other physicians, I started to see that mapped on to them finding meaning in medicine, them finding meaning in their life, which, jumping back, it's like a really good movie that gives you flashbacks. jumping back reminded me of my struggle in medical school and in college with mental health, which I didn't have language for back then, and that I didn't feel safe to tell people back then, because culturally speaking, it wasn't a thing that we did. So anyway, just to fast forward all the way forward, how I ended up where I am now is during the pandemic, a lot of things shifted for a lot of people. Yes. And I stepped into activism, which brought me into this world of more deeply learning about trauma, deeply diving and delving into trauma, deeply delving and diving into what
what constitutes safety and teaching people about trauma-informed communication for their families, for their organizations, and how to recognize trauma in themselves as well. So that's the long and the short of it.
Yeah, I love that. Let's take that as a diving board, this idea of recognizing trauma inside of yourself. So before we were recording, we were chatting about that. Where do you go when you have someone who kind of you're recognizing that there's trauma in there and they don't really associate in that way? What is there a fear there that people have of associating themselves as trauma survivors? Do they really just not see it? What's the education piece there for you?
Well, for me, and you know, there's two ways I could tell this story, but I'm going to tell it from the side of the coach first, and then I'm going to come back to the personal. Yeah. So what I can see now is I look at, I listen for people's reactions. I say listen, but it's like really observation. And some of it is listening with my eyes, looking very acutely at what is the body language? Is there congruency in what they're saying and what they're doing? And really listening for what are the underlying, I would say, beliefs that are lying under their words. I'm trained to listen for that. So that's kind of like what I listen for. But a lot of it, just if I were to meet someone, it would be their reactions.
Yeah.
Are their reactions congruent with the circumstance or the situation in my mental model? And just understanding really that everyone's responses and reactions could be at any given time informed by trauma. I could be reminding them of something or someone, but my tone of voice, and just understanding that. Now, personally speaking, you know, I shared how I grew up, and I never considered that entire time that I was a survivor of trauma. It never even crossed my mind until I was sitting across from a friend of mine who is a PhD psychologist, and we were having lunch, and I must have said something that activated this thought in her. And she asked me, "Are you a trauma survivor?" And I was in my 30s, a whole grown physician practicing. And I said, "No, I'm not." Now I said, "My mom is, because my mom suffered abuse when we were children." And she said, "Well, did you know that you also were a trauma survivor?" And it was the first time I had even considered that.
Wow. You hadn't even thought about it. It never even crossed your mind. Wow.
Right. Because it didn't happen directly to me.
Yes.
And so then, of course, later when I started to learn about direct versus indirect versus vicarious, then it was like, and then, you know, not the event itself, but what happens inside of our bodies. And it could be multiple intensities. And then even at that point, I recognized beyond just being a child witness, there were a lot of things that I grew up in my childhood that I would consider repeated intensities that left me with trauma.
It is always amazing when you can look at someone's reaction and you're on the outside and you can recognize, I love that word congruency, right? That this is incongruent to what's happening. You see someone just completely freaking out on their kid or just losing their mind in the grocery store because someone, you know, cut in front of them. Yes, it's an adverse event that's happening right now, but their reaction to it is so blown up. It has to be from somewhere else. And this is what I kind of want to dive into, this idea of like finding the roots of people's suffering, right? And for you, I know you're working with a lot of people that have a lot of self-doubt, have a lot of fears. How does helping them finding their roots really help them move forward beyond them or to heal their roots?
Well, so just to backtrack, there are people I work with who they don't recognize that they have fear, and they do recognize they might have doubt. They will call it imposter experience or imposter syndrome, but they don't always clock it as fear. And so, because even fear has a connotation to it, right? It's stigmatized.
Yeah.
Especially in our community. When I mean our community, I mean the physician community. And I also mean the Black and Brown community.
Yeah.
Right. We don't have time to be afraid. We don't have time to have feelings. So there's some nuances, culturally speaking.
Yeah.
So to come back to what you're talking about in terms of finding the root, a lot of times I listen for beliefs and I ask, when was the first time you decided that?
Yeah.
Right.
Question.
The other thing is I just ask, what is going on in your head when this is happening?
Yeah.
And it elicits the conversations that are happening inside of the head. And then we can begin to search for the root. When was the first time that ever happened? Or when was the first time you ever said that to yourself? Yeah. What was happening when you first felt that thing?
Wow.
You know, and then the particular techniques that I use are like shifting perspective, giving different, what are the different perspectives? If you go to that first event, what are the different perspectives that are there that you can see that will help you to now release that?
Mm.
Right. And it gives such freedom. So that's how we deal with the root when we're, well, I said my parts.
Yes. Yes. All of your parts are welcome here.
All of my parts. That's right.
I love that idea of releasing. I like the way that you, when you're there, while you're seeing where it's coming from. You're looking at the different angles. You're really like investigating and inspecting it. So with this though, someone has to feel really safe in order to start doing that investigation work with you. And I know my clients the same as well. When we're digging into trauma, finding the original places, when this first happened to you, such a great question. Thanks for saying that. Why is there such a need for your clients to feel safe before you do that kind of work?
Well, you know, if you think about it, the client is about to reveal the innermost parts of themselves. This is where they get most vulnerable. This is where they go to the place where they feel most embarrassed or ashamed, especially if they're high performing people in an industry that says feeling is wrong, in an industry or a world or a society where for them feeling is wrong, right? So again, there's some cultural nuances there. And so they already have this sort of background of maybe shame or embarrassment. And so in order for them to open up, there has to be a container of safety. There has to be that emotional and that psychological safety. And that really comes with rapport, creating that rapport and taking the time to do that. Yeah. And it's something that I just want to mention. It's something that can be done in the therapeutic relationship, but it's something that can be done in any relationship, friendships, intimate partner relationships, in organizations, in corporations. And it's not talked a lot about from that standpoint, because people experience trauma in, like, people come to work with their traumas. People lead with their traumas. People, you know, we have to get that people who have traumas, they go everywhere.
They
we
are.
Could say, yeah. I mean, we could say presidents are leading countries from their trauma.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Thank you for naming that. People who are leading from their trauma, that they're blended with these parts, if we're using IFS language, they are in a state where they're constantly in survival mode. Their autonomic nervous system is reactionary, right? Yes. They're not having a lot of that rest and digest place for themselves. And so many people are coming, walking around in every place, the grocery store, to the office, to the White House.
Yeah.
In these dysregulated states. And so finding that safety, I the word container, that really is important, because it's building these safe relationships.
That's right.
And it comes with that ability to trust. So thank you for being that container, so that people can do that, because we're talking finding roots, digging things up, going to the places that have hurt them the most, you know, divulging their fears, things that have happened to them that shouldn't have, and then the things that should have happened to them that didn't, right? Love and respect, right? So it just brings me forward to this idea of moving into the idea of resistance. I know that resistance can sometimes mean that maybe we're moving too fast, right? If you're noticing that there's a resistance in yourself or your client, but what are you noticing that resistance is really telling you? What's the story behind someone having resistance and either finding help or digging deep in the help or moving forward with the help that they've received?
Yeah, I think that when it comes to resistance, you have to sort of distinguish what's behind the resistance to know what it's telling us. And you know, there's resistance that could be an alarm, like an actual intuitive alarm from our detection system that's saying stop. And so we assess that, like, what is behind it? What is it that you're experiencing in your body that is constituting, that you're naming resistance, right? And so resistance could mean you're going too fast. Resistance could mean that there is, you do not feel safe, and you need to investigate why you don't feel safe. Because is it that you feel safe because there's actually something that's happening, that you're being gaslit, or that, you know, there's something that's happening to you? Or is it that you're not feeling safe because something reminds you of something that's unsafe, and actually you are safe? And so then you kind of look again, we're going to the root. What is the root of the resistance? What is behind it? It could be telling you lots of things. I think asking the question, you know, what is happening in my body right now, and what is happening around me, and is it congruent with the situation? Is resistance warranted at this moment? And then, you know, resistance could just mean we're afraid to do something that is in the unknown, which doesn't necessarily have to come from trauma. It's just a normal part of stretching ourselves, you know, when we're in a manageably stressful situation, right? We have the positive and the manageable stress. We have to talk about the stress, the trauma continuum, and that past that manageable, or moving inside of that manageable stress and into the discomfort of conscious competence, talking about the learning you, right?
Yes. Yeah.
From the conscious incompetence, knowing something that you don't know something, to the conscious competence, learning the thing and it being clunky and well, that can create resistance too, but that's positive stress.
Right.
So just distinguishing what's happening that is bringing up resistance. And is it safety, or is it the learning you?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for naming that. The acknowledgement that someone can move forward with a little bit of resistance, as long as it's not overtaking the system, because you're recognizing this maybe isn't warranted. Like you said, this is something that I'm just learning, so it's new. My long-term listeners know the brain hates the unfamiliar. It would rather have a familiar bad than to go and move toward an unfamiliar good. It doesn't care the quality. It cares whether it knows what it's doing or not. It doesn't like unexpected. And so when you're pushing yourself, there's that movement that's going to not feel great. It's a tool. You're out your brain, and you're trying to get your brain to lift a little heavier, and it's going to strain, but it's not going to break. Yeah, that's great. I want to ask you, on your site, you talk about self-affirmations, and you kind of say, like, we have to kind of be careful of these. And I know that self-affirmation techniques, they can be really helpful to survivors, right? Moving into a place of more worthiness, recognizing some self-compassion, some self-love, and kind of giving them some words that they maybe have not heard from other loving people that they should have heard in their life, parents or siblings or abusive, right? What is that when you say that we should be really careful with self-affirmations? Can we go too far with them? What does that look like?
Well, I don't believe we could go too far. What I think we have to be mindful of is using affirmations as a band-aid to, and not avoiding the work that needs to be done to heal under what's underneath. So that's it. It's, you know, sometimes people want to affirmation themselves to life and, you know, without actually, you know, going deep and finding the root. Mm-hmm. If you're doing the work of finding the root and doing the work with, you know, someone like yourself or myself who are like healing those parts of us, and you're using affirmation as a tool to, mm-hmm. like you said, like almost the mind from the things that you've heard in the past, then that's a perfect use of affirmation. But when we talk about this world of self-help, sometimes, you know, it fits into the individualism, like I have to do it all by myself. And then when the result doesn't come, then it becomes a cycle of self-deprecation, a cycle of self-blame, a cycle, and it's not useful, it's harmful.
Yeah.
So I just think that with affirmations, we want to pair that with healing work, with deep healing work, so that you're releasing and replacing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because I'm hearing that if someone really isn't jumping into the work, it's almost as though it's a use of self-affirmation bypass is happening, and you're using that instead. Okay, that's really great. Using it as a type of tool to continue to repair while you're also repairing what's underneath.
Yep.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I love that. Okay. Yeah, very cool. I want to give you a moment to chat about, you have a podcast called The Black Mind Garden, and I know you've written multiple books. Who should be listening to this? Who should be reading your books? How did this come about? What's the vision here?
Well, that's a great question. The vision, how did it come about? Well, it's something that wakes me up out of my sleep. The Black Mind Garden podcast, it came out of, now I'm a longtime podcaster, radio show person. And so I've always talked about wellness. The Black Mind Garden came out of me wanting to talk about the things in healing that we don't usually talk about, that people don't think about, and weave into them the tools and of neuro-linguistic programming, which is my area of expertise, that I'm a trainer, and these tools, these thought experiments, so and apply them to different areas of life. So apply them to corporation, apply them to parenting, apply them to intimate partner relationships. So a lot of what the Black Mind Garden is about. And lately, you'll hear, if you listen to the podcast, I talk a lot about psychological safety in these various domains and trauma and trauma-informed communication. Like, that's where I live these days, and how that applies to different areas of life, personal and family and relationship and business and corporate books that I have. And I also, you know, inside of the book, so I have a couple of books. One is called Conscious Anti-Racism that I co-wrote with my partner, Dr. Jill Wiener. And we talk about how the of oppression, we break down the culture of oppression, the symptoms and characteristics. And then we talk about, you know, what are the mindfulness tools to be able to deal with the discomfort of leaning into this work. And inside of that, I weave into their communication tools and techniques for people to do this work in their own. We have a course as well. Yeah. And the other book that I wrote called The Wellness Blueprint, that's an old, but it's really all about taking on your well-being, mind, body, and spirit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in the course of writing more books, but what's most present for me now is my course, Communication That Transforms. It's a trauma-informed communication course. Mm-hmm. And that is the where either whether you're an organization or you're an individual, or you're a community leader, what I'm endeavoring to do is to really get this work out to the masses. So that's where I'm currently focusing my transformation.
I love that. The content, you can hear your passion, right? So there is such a wealth of content. You could probably write 1,000 books, because I can tell that your mind has a lot of places it wants to go in kind of healing the world. You know, I am a firm believer. I wish not everyone has to be trauma trained. Not everyone has to be a mental health professional or work specifically with trauma victims and survivors. But I wish every human on the planet had to be trauma informed. If that just be a course that we were taught in elementary and then high school and then again in college, and just kind of weave it into our lives, like the world that we live in, I think so much pain would just dissipate like that if everyone were healing in their language, in their communication, in their, you know, situations with neighbors, friends, family, coworkers, colleagues. Wow, the world would just be such a different place. So I thank you so much for yes. No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say that's my legacy work, Sarah. That's my legacy work.
Yeah. Yeah, do it. Let's just right now in this podcast, we're declaring every human being by the end of let's give us a year. Let's say by the end of 2025, the entire world must be trauma informed. Let's just do it. We're gonna declare. We're gonna get the content. We're gonna teach you how to be sensitive to what people have gone through, how to look, how to listen for that things that are happening, and go, you've been through some stuff. Now, I have to warn people though that are moving in the direction of being more trauma informed. The more trauma informed you are, you cannot go backwards.
That's right.
Once you see the world with that lens, you start to see everything to that lens. And there's been books written about being careful to not go too far, because then you like becomes hero complex stuff. It becomes savior stuff. It becomes you're overwhelmed, and your mental health can actually, the powerful being trauma informed can, is that it can actually start to affect you negatively if you're not too careful. But if you looked at your neighbors, just neighbors in your neighborhood, in your building, in a trauma informed lens, the way you would shift and how you even just say hello to them or not say hello to them would be would be so, so different. But you can't go backwards. So if you're jumping into this work, if you're watching and listening right now, just I'm warning you, you can't go back. Once you see it, you just cannot go back. So yeah. I thank you so much for being here. We always ask all of our guests. So you've gone through, obviously, your childhood trauma. You suffered a lot of burnout in your professional life and your college years. What were some of the most impactful resources that were useful to you when you were going through your journey of healing?
Well, one of the first most impactful resources was Al-Anon. So yes, I'm an adult child and I married an alcoholic. So that was the first place. And I don't know who's listening who may be an adult child of an addict or an alcoholic, whether you're living with an alcoholic or not, Al-Anon is the place to be. Mm-hmm. It is where my healing started. Yes. And then after that, I delved into personal development work. I would say Pema Chodron.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love, love, love. I was actually came across a few of her books. So Pema Chodron, you know, the When Things Fall Apart, From Fear to Fearlessness, that she was one of the major pieces of transformation. Eckhart Tolle, of course, The Power of Now. I'm looking at my bookshelf a little bit because I still have all of those books.
Yes, so, yeah, they keep the collection of the good stuff. They have
gosh.
You have to be able to read them again sometimes. Yeah.
And even Neil Donald Walsh, Conversations with God, those conversations. And I'm not a super religious person, but that book was just, I don't know, that was a healing. That was one of those books on my healing journey, The Celestine Prophecy, even though it's a fictional book by Redfield. It took me into my healing journey. And then, of course, I discovered NLP. And then that led me down a whole nother, rabbit hole, positive transformational rabbit hole. So those are some of the resources that helped me along the way. I could name dozens more, but we don't have time for that.
We'll do that on another show. I love that. Dr. Maisha, thank you so much for joining us today. Please tell everyone where they can find you, your books, the podcast. I'll have everything that we talked about today linked in the show notes and all of your links down below.
Awesome. So if you want to listen to the podcast, it's called The Black Mind Garden. And you can listen to it on your favorite podcast platform. Just search it on Spotify or Apple or whatever you listen to, it'll come up. To learn more about the work that I do, the course that I have, the program that I run, to invite me to speak to your organization, you can go to mindremappingacademy.com. And in the menu, you'll find where you need to go based on what you're interested in. And finally, if you want to connect with me on social media, I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram, and sometimes TikTok.
Yeah.
It's all / Dr. Maisha. So you can find me pretty much on all of those four platforms and YouTube as well. / Dr. Maisha.
Love it. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to or watching this episode of the Trauma Survivorhood Podcast. Please subscribe, like, share, and follow. For any information that was discussed in this podcast episode, check out the show notes below. Until next time, be well.